Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode of Believe is brought to you by Cryptid Coffee Co. Use promo code BELIEVE on checkout for 10% off their Angry Yowie coffee blend. Head over to cryptid.com.au to check them out.
It was just the most massive thing I've ever seen. To tell you the honest truth, I thought, well, we're the only ones left on this planet. Something's happened. We've missed something here.
The fear that went in me when I seen it was just the feeling. I'd say it was fear, but I've never felt that feeling before in my entire life.
It's a weird feeling. Like, you can't explain it when you don't know. You feel like you're being followed, but you don't know what it is.
We had two to our right, another one in front of us, another one to the left, and another one just across the road, shaking the daylight out of the tree. All we get is a big red eye.
I remember waking up and looking at the end of the bed, and there was a figure there, almost insect-like, and then I blacked out.
Welcome to the show, everyone. My name is Cade Moyer, and you are listening to the Believe Paranormal and UFO Podcast. If you have had an encounter and would like to share it, please get in touch with me. My email address is believepod@gmail.com. If you enjoy the podcast, be sure to leave us a rating or review wherever you listen and head on over to our website, believepod.com, and consider becoming a member to get bonus episodes and video content. Today I'm joined by Ben, and Ben is a returning guest on the podcast for reasons of technical difficulties or what we actually are going to be talking about tonight, because this is a very, very unique haunting slash situation that Ben has found himself in. He talks about this creature known as the Ox Monster. So, Ben, welcome back to the show.
G'day, Cade. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, mate, it is some very unique circumstances to say the least, because not a lot of files get corrupted or go funny, but this one did, and I feel like it might be a little bit too much of a coincidence for that to happen, especially considering the content that we spoke about. So essentially, Ben, this Ox Monster is something that has been with you for all your life, and the name, you'll explain that, but can you tell me how you got introduced to this entity, and really walk us through everything that happened in that situation?
Well, I suppose to put things into context, so I'm in the wrong side of 35 now. And when I was about 18, I was in the Army Reserve, just waiting to go off to the regular Army. And me and a few of my mates were off in a Army training area where we came across what we believed at the stage, that before we had any incidents with it, what we believed to be a sort of haunted house. And we sort of had a few incidents with something within that house. Then I ended up following myself from one side of the country to the other, and one of my very good mates also from one side of the country to the other side. We both sort of started having experiences. He was having experiences over in Wagga and then Townsville, and I was having experiences in Darwin.
Yeah, so this thing is really kind of attached itself to you and your mate, and potentially the whole crew of people that went into this house. So I know what happened in this house was quite intense. So are you able to take us back to the moment when you first kind of encountered this entity and walk us through what happened? Because it truly is one of the most mind-blowing experiences that I've ever heard.
Yeah, no, she's a, it's a pretty crazy story. Whenever I used, like, you know, told it many sort of times, and literally now I can sort of tell it, and the hairs on my arms don't all stand up. But for a very long time, every time I'd tell this story, it would give everyone the chills, and you know, would really freak me out as well. So yeah, like as I said, so this is in the sort of early 2000s. Me and my mates are away with the army. We're at a training area where we are basically we're playing as the enemy party. So our job is to be at certain places, certain times to ambush and, you know, basically start a firefight with another group so they can take turns commanding and attack and sort of doing all that sort of stuff on a promotion course to be a corporal. Because of what the nature of what our duties were while we were doing that, when we weren't actually on the task, we were sort of left alone. And the place they had us set up as for our little camp was, you know, only a couple of hundred, about 100, maybe 200 metres away from this old farmhouse. So one afternoon, one of my really good mates was there with me. We were sort of sitting there talking crap and smoking a couple of durries, and it's sort of late summer afternoon, and my mate goes to me, "Hey man, have you ever like felt like Oxley House is staring at you?" And I'm like, "Yeah man, that place really, really, really gives me the creeps." So, because of the training area we use quite regularly, you know, we'd seen this place quite a few times and sort of been around it, but it was just this place that you just wanted to give a wide berth to. It just was creepy. Anyway, we're a bit bored. We don't have a lot going on that afternoon. So he's like, "Oh, we should go over there and have a look at it. You know, have a look in there." And I'm just like getting this voice in the back of my head saying, "Nope, stay away from there. Do not go near it." Anyway, my mate, you know, us being sort of young blokes, full of testosterone and not wanting to look weak in front of each other sort of thing, mate sort of egged me into coming over to Oxley House to have a little bit of a snoop around and see what we can see. So we rock up there, and walk across there. It's not far, as I said, only 100, 200 metres away. And we get to the front door, and it's all boarded up, and you can't go through the front door. And just looking at this house, you're looking at a house, you know, that's like looks like it's from, you know, the 1800s. Like, it is not a new house. It's not even, you know, it's much more than, you know, seems much more than 100 years sort of old sort of thing. Now, yeah, front door's all boarded up, so we walk around the side of it, and if you think of a house that's, you know, sort of shape of a square, gone around one side, gone to the other side, and there's a door there, and that's sort of boarded up or something. And then if you think of a house with a square, then it's got like a little square sort of next to it on one of the corners. Anyway, this attachment sort of area, it has a door that's just wide open. So before I realise it, yes, I'm getting all the alarm bells going off, you know, sixth sense telling me to stay away from it, stay away from it, stay away from it. But before I know it, well, I'm walking down the hallway and my mate's sort of right behind me. Get down through this hallway, you know, there's doors to our left and right. I don't remember much about them. And this hallway sort of opens up into a large room, which I sort of understood, well, guess at some stage it used to be a kitchen. And immediately, bang, left corner, straight in front of me, I see this black figure, just this mass. And it's there for a second or two, and then it's disappeared. And I've sort of shuddered back, and without saying any words to my mate, he's like, "God, yeah, I saw that too, man." I'm like, "Oh my God." Yeah. So I was like, you know, it's one of those things, did I just see that? And yeah, without me even vocalizing it, just my movement, he's like, "Yeah, I saw that too." Now, the alarm bells are going absolutely crazy. My spidey senses are going nuts, telling me, just get out of there. But, you know, the macho, I'm a bloke, I'm a soldier, I'm tough, is sort of keeping me there, and I don't want to show any weakness. And so we walk through the threshold of that doorway into the kitchen area, and to my right I can see there is another wide open room, which is a lounge room area. You can see a stone fireplace in there. And you can tell there used to be a wall there, but then the wall's I'm not sure whether it's been knocked down or... At some stage, there was two separate rooms. So it was late in the year, November-ish, I reckon late November, and it's a summer afternoon. It's tin roof. It's got the same temperature inside as the ambient temperature outside, which is, quite warm. I take a step through the non-existent wall now into the other room, the lounge room sort of area with the stone fireplace, which we end up nicknaming the evil room. And as soon as I've crossed the threshold of that, what was a wall, it is ice cold. Like the temperature feels like it's dropped 20, 30 degrees. And it's, for all intents and purposes, it's the same area. There's no reason why the temperature should drop between those two areas because they basically are just the one big area. I stand in that room, and it seems like an eternity, but it was only a couple of seconds, and it was just this insane feeling of just, you go into a room and you can feel it's crowded, you can just feel energy of people, whatever, and, as opposed to walking into an empty room. And it felt crowded. And I never looked up, but for some reason just felt like the ceiling was really, really high above me. My imagination makes me think there's rafters and, spider webs and stuff like that. But it seemed like it was quite a big room. Now, this will make sense later on. I stand there and I cannot handle that feeling. And I jumped out. I just had to jump out. I just couldn't handle it. My mate with me, he's got a bit of a Celtic background. We've talked about sort of stuff before, but we've never really had a situation like what we're about to go into. He goes and stands in there, and he stands there for a few seconds later after me, and then he couldn't handle the feeling of that either. And I can't remember what spurred me, but I got really spooked. It was like, okay, I've got to get out of here. And I just ran. And I just ran straight down that hallway we'd come out. Now, still, it's afternoon, it's sort of just before the sun setting, so, there's still daylight, you can see outside sort of thing. But for some reason, in my panic, instead of me just running straight down this straight hallway outside, I've taken a left turn or a right turn, and I've just run into one of these rooms off to the side, and I'm covered in spider webs, and I'm screaming, and I'm freaking out. Anyway, my mate's followed me, and he's grabbed me, and he's pulled me out. Through the door, because I'm so scared, I'm almost catatonic, petrified. And then you hear all this almighty sort of roar, this big guttural sort of scream coming out. It was so loud and so big. And then all this, it sounded like all this furniture was getting upended and thrown around the rooms and stuff behind us. And we both sort of just looked at each other and legged it back to where the rest of the team was sort of set up. And we run back there and, we're panting and we're white as ghosts and we're petrified. And we get back to where the other blokes are. So there's probably four to six other guys there. And they're sort of giving us what the hell's happened to you guys? What's going on? So we start telling them sort of what's happened, and everyone's just whatever dickheads, just having a laugh and just whatever, nice story, bro. I've got to say, we're away doing army training, so we're all sober. No one's doing drugs, no one's drinking. We're staying cold sober, but not making any sense with the story we're trying to tell these guys that haven't experienced what we've just gone through. And, that was sort of day one, and it continued.
So you were in this house, and from what you're saying there, it almost sounds like reality is changing for you while you're in there because, you say you walk in and you see a wall there, but then the wall's gone and things just don't feel like they're right. Is that right to assume?
Yeah, so... Think of it, so figure the temperature drop like this. So if you've got I live up north, so we have air conditioners. So if you've got all the air cons turned off in your house and you've got one air con turned in one room and you've got the door closed and you walk in from the sort of ambient temperature of what it is outside and then you open a door and you walk into this room where the air con's pumping, you know, you just get temperature drop just like that. And that's all we experienced in there. But obviously there's no air conditioners and the wall's gone. So there's no reason why this one room would have any different temperature to what it's next to, because basically it is just one big room now, but at some, you know, it used to be two separate rooms, but there's nothing that can make any sense for that temperature drop. And it was just so noticeable. It was just so in your face. Like, you know, you hear stories, you know, where people experience, you know, ghosts and stuff like that, and they feel that temperature drop, you know, when the spirits are out or something like that. Like, it was like that, but it was like times a thousand. It wasn't just a little bit. It was going from summer into, I've been over to Canada and done training in Canada in the Arctic, and it was like that sort of temperature. It was just ice cold. You know, it made your blood cold.
That would have been quite a paradigming changing experience, because, you know, you've walked into this house and you saw something. Like, you saw some type of figure in a black mass, and then, you know, you have this feeling of instant temperature change. Like, the whole thing is just not normal for you. That really, really would have been a moment of, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, so, like, the places, like, before I even went in, I was like, this place is creepy. This place gives me the creeps. But once that happened, I was like, this is so much more than that. This is not just a creepy place. This is evil.
So you go back to all the boys back at camp, and they basically just laugh at you.
You got a bunch of guys, you know, like, just everyone sort of, you know, like, we're all just young, you know, we're just really teenagers, but we're all pretending that we're sort of tough men sort of thing. So you don't show any weakness around each other. You sort of, everyone sort of G's each other up, and, you know, there's lots of ribbing and lots of, you know, sort of horseplay and, you know, taking the piss out of each other sort of thing. And then me and my mate come back with this bizarre story. The guys are just like, you guys are nuts. You know, you guys are just absolute, you know, talking crap. And we had this new guy in our, reasonably new guy in our team. And he's a bit nerdy. He was a lovely guy, a lovely intelligent guy, but he was just a bit more on the nerdy sort of side. And for some reason, he decided that the way to sort of make it, you know, win his way into the team and being one of the boys was to show his bravery, his bravado. He's decided, I'm going to go sleep in that house.
Oh no!
And yeah, and so just I'm straight up going, nah, bro, stay away, don't do it. It's bad, it's evil. It's something really wrong there. Just don't go near it. Just don't do it. Rah. But the more I'm telling him about not to do it, he's like thinking that this is all just some bullcrap story we've made out to make him be a wimp. And so the more I'm telling him stay away, I think it's the more determined it's making him to go inside there. So anyway, it's a conversation, you know, we've gone for the evening, nothing really, you know, nothing out of the ordinary sort of happens that night. Next day we go off and, you know, do what we have to do during the day. We come back in the afternoon. And, you know, this the guy I was telling you about has decided, yep, I'm going to go sleep in there that night. So I've tried all I can to persuade him, you know, dissuade him from going in there. And, yeah, it's just made him more and more determined to do it. So anyway, yeah, it's 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Or, you know, actually it's probably, like, you know, more 5 or 6 o'clock in the afternoon. So he's got his stuff together and they go heading over to the house. And I'm just like, I'm not coming. I'm staying the hell away from here, from that. You guys just go do whatever. But I'm telling you, don't go there. But whatever you do, it's got nothing to do with me. I'm out. This is not me. Nah, not good. Bad, bad juju. Anyway, they go into the house. And I'm, you know, hear a bit of yelling. It's my mate that I was there on the first night with. He's like, you have to come over and have a look at this. I'm like, nah, not coming over, stay away. Nah, not coming. And he's like, nah, you really just, you don't come in. Just come in, come around here and look in the hallway. And eventually I reluctantly head over there and look down the hallway. I'm like, what is it? I look down the hallway. So that hallway that I ran down in a full panic is missing floorboards all through it, like they're rotten. You literally have to like jump from one part to the other to the other to the other to make your way up actually through that hallway. And then there's a gap between where the floorboards would be and the actual ground, you know, which is maybe close to a meter tall or something, meter high sort of thing. So I know for a fact there's no way, especially in my blind panic, that I could have run down that hallway. It doesn't make sense. Like, there's no way I physically could have done it without, you know, really hurting myself, without falling through, because there's not much floor there. Like, you literally, it's completely rotten. It's gone. So I'm like, oh, and he's like, yeah, my mate, for the first night, like, yeah, that's not at all. I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's like, remember the evil room? Did it feel to you like that, like, had a massive high ceiling? And I was like, yeah. It felt like, you know, if I looked up, I'd probably, like, see some body hanging, you know, from rafters, like some medieval sort of looking stuff. And he's like, yeah, man, that ceiling is, like, so low that my hair, you know, basically rubs against the ceiling. He's like, it's this tiny little room with this stone fireplace in it. And I'm like, that is really, really weird. And he's like, yeah, and there's a bed in there and that's what we must have heard being thrown around sort of thing. But I swear it wasn't there, like this old cast iron bed, but I swear it wasn't there when me and him walked in there. So this house is just not making any sense, you know, like literally, like I'm looking at it, I'm seeing the other hallway. I didn't go into the other room because I'm like, no, I'm not crossing the threshold and going back in there. But it is just this different thing. And like, okay, I'm happy to accept like ghost, supernatural, weird sort of stuff, but I can't even begin to think of anything that can explain the change in this house. Like, it literally is physically different than it was the day before.
That is an absolute head spin, because I was thinking that, you know, weird stuff was going on, but this is an absolute next level. Like, this house is playing tricks on you to the point that it's changing the genuine shape and reality of what you are experiencing.
Oh, yeah. It's just so weird. So, like, the day before we went up there and, you know, I went to that front door and it's all boarded up and, you know, it's got this feeling like, stay away, don't go in. You know, like, the house is telling you, stay away. And we went around to the side of it, and there's a door that wouldn't, you know, it was boarded up and we couldn't go through. And then this next door, which has a hallway and it's just wide open, it's like, come in. It was just literally the feeling that you were getting. Like, it was like, I didn't have anything to put it into context with, but it was supernatural from the start of it. Like, just going near it, you could feel the energy of this thing, like, of this house, this place. Like, I don't know, man, it's like some bizarre portal or something, but it is, whatever it is, it was like really, really powerful, and it could, yeah, it changed reality around us.
The other guys that went there the next day with you, did they perceive the house the same way you did in that exact same moment?
I don't know, because they didn't have any context to put it in from the night before, because they hadn't really had anything to do with that.
Yeah, but did they see, like, the hallway was all rooted? Did they see?
Yeah. And they just thought that's how it was.
Yeah, wow.
So, like, I think what we saw that second night was actually how the house really physically is. But the night before, it was different. It was like literally me and my mate for the first night literally like went into something different.
What do you think happened? Do you think you went into like a, and I don't want to sound too wooey, but like, do you think you went into like a time slip? Like, you were in that house in a different period of time, or, you know, do you think you're like in a like a parallel universe version of what that house was. And now, a quick word from our sponsor.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Also, are you wanting more content? Why not become a Believe Plus member? You'll get access to exclusive podcasts and episodes that aren't available to the public. Not only that, you'll also get our regular feed without any ads. Head to believepod.com/plus to sign up today for just $5 a month.
It's really hard to sort of put it into words, but I think whatever it is so powerful. Like, it's not just, you know, your normal ghost that walks up and down a hallway and, you know, opens a door every once in a while sort of thing, sort of haunting. But this thing, like, I reckon that house, that place, is some sort of, like, powerful portal to something else that we, us humans on here on Earth, that, you know, the reality we perceive, we can't understand that. Like, I just, all I know is it was different. It was so different. And if I hadn't have experienced it, I wouldn't believe it. You know, like, and it's so annoying because I can't put it into words and go, oh, actually, yeah, I think it was this. Like, I just, I know when, whether there's ley lines under there or, you know, whatever it is, but it is just a powerful place. And I think because of where it is in such a, you know, you think of a military training area, so people don't go there. You know, like, it's blocked off. It's left there. And the army, when they go there, they don't really want to, no one really goes near their house anyway. So if you're like something that just wants to sit there and brood and be dark and left alone, it's kind of, yeah, sort of perfect place to be.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And, you know, the thing is, like, I don't want to say, like, you know, the army's bad or anything like that, but, you know, the army has a lot of connections to, you know, war and things like that, you know, like, not overly pleasant,
yeah,
things
I know
that people
want
to...
There is some sort of, yeah, there is a sort of darkness or energy that is sort of attached to that sort of stuff, you know, training guys to fight and kill.
Yeah, 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 exactly. And, you know, that's not to knock on it. It's just that's the byproduct of that situation.
Yeah.
So you go back there, your mind's just probably doing backflips on itself at this point.
And, like, I think we're, like, trying to explain to the others, like, that this is different than the night before. And no one's sort of comprehending or listening, you know, like, no one, because they're just saying it, oh, yeah, we've got to jump here, we've got to jump there. You know, like, they're not really taking it on. They're sort of like, it's all part of this made up to freak everyone out. So none of them are really taken seriously, but me and my mate are. And we're both going, holy crap. But anyway, the other guy has made the decision that, yes, he's going into the house. So they've gone in with him, and they've set him up in got his bivy bag and sleeping bag, and they've set it up next to the stone fireplace. They've cracked a few psyllium sticks, so, you know, like those glow sticks you have at nightclubs and little kids run around with and that. So cracked them around the place in a few places, you know, so there's a bit of light for him. And we gave him, like, a little handheld radio, and we had one. So we've got our normal army radios, but if we transmit anything on them, then anyone on the radio net can hear what we're saying. So we used to carry our own little internal, you know, comms, or we used to call it jack comms, and, you know, little crappy two-way radios, you know, you get from Jayco or something. And we've given him one, and we've got one. Anyway, all the guys come back out of the house. I left him in there, and we've gone back to where we were sort of set up for the evening. And, you know, sun starts setting, and we're sort of just sitting around, just talking and nothing, doing nothing too exciting. And we sort of, like, because me and my mate were taking this quite seriously, as in, like, we sort of, like, made sure that none of us were actually stuffing with the guy inside, like, because I just thought it was really, really bad. But at the same time, my mate from the first night, he's had a completely different reaction. So he's gone up and he's got these two pieces of, like, gum tree sort of sticks, and he's tied them together with a hoochie cord and made this big crucifix out of them. He's got out his bayonet and he's carved these sort of, been carving all these Celtic symbols all over this big crucifix. And it's like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, getting ready to do battle. What the hell? But like, he was on task. He was like, yep, I'm getting ready. You know, he knew something's going to go down. Anyway, after, you know, the other bloke's been in there for 30 minutes or an hour or something, he comes out of the radio and he's like, oh, not funny, guys, I can hear you. It's like, what are you talking about? He's like, I can hear you, mate. Like, I can hear you guys stuffing around. I saw you. He's like, hey, man, none of us are there. We're not doing anything. We're not stuffing with you. Yeah, whatever. Real funny, guys. Bullshit. You know, like, if I'm doing this, you can't stuff with me. And we're like, yeah, man, we're not stuffing with you. And anyway, he's sort of angry and disgruntled on the other side of the radio, but while that's happening, my other mate is there carving this cross and making these Celtic symbols more intricate and sort of thing, and he's now made himself like a bit of a cape out of Camnet and just warrior. And the other boys are sort of just like sitting around having a great old time thinking, this is freaking bizarre, you guys are all nuts. Anyway, maybe like another half hour or an hour, you know, he comes back over the radio and you can hear the fear in his voice. And he's like really almost like begging with us to like stop screwing with him. And we're like, mate, we're not doing anything. We're not doing anything, okay? And my mate from the first night sort of giving me this sort of, I'm not sure whether we had a conversation, but we sort of like, whether it was sort of this, we looked at each other and he was like, yeah, it's time. We need to get him out of there. And he comes over the radio and you just hear this whimpering sort of little voice sort of go, help. And, yep, so we head off back to the house. But, again, I'm not going in there. So I think I stayed like 10 or 15 metres away from the house while the rest of them sort of went in. The other guys are like, you can see that they're starting to get a bit scared, like, what the hell is going on sort of thing. And, anyway, they've gone into the house and mate for the first night, he's up front of them. They've gone up the hallway and he's got the big cross. And he walks into what we call through the kitchen into what we call the evil room. And he just said, yep, the temperature was dropped. It's a completely different temperature from the rest of the house. And the room was just completely full, like, of energy. Like, you know, it just felt like it was chaotic and there was people, there's things around him and all that sort of stuff. Anyway, he circles around the bloke that was who was going to sleep in there. He circles around him with this crucifix sort of protecting him. And the other guys go in and pick him up. And this guy's so petrified, man, like he's basically frozen stiff in the fetal position. He's sleeping gear. So they've picked him up and pulled him out of the house. And I've come out the hallway sort of thing, and then there's furniture and stuff being thrown around again behind them. I can't remember if there was a big yell like there was the first night, but there was definitely the furniture again thrown around in there. And bear in mind, in this house, like even just looking in there, like that we looked through, there's like not much there. There's not like a lot of furniture at all. There's maybe like a couple of pieces, and there's this old cast iron bed in the evil room. But just, you know, it sounds like someone is going to town just trashing the place. We've got our mate back up to where we were sort of set up for the night, and he just won't say a word. Like, he is absolutely, like, petrified. I've never seen anyone so scared him ever. Like, you can't, words cannot do justice to how scared this guy was. He didn't say a word for about half an hour. And then eventually he like asked for a cigarette, and I don't even think he smokes. And so like lit him some cigarette, and he's having a cigarette, and I'm like, dude, what the hell happened in there? And then he started telling us that, you know, as the
sort of, as the sun sort of went down, he could just hear and feel, you know, people just, or people, things coming into the room with him. And it's just getting crowded and crowded. And that's when he's on the radio telling us, oh, it's not funny, I can hear you sort of thing. I can hear you in the other rooms and that sort of stuff. And then as a, you know, sort of the light had, you know, just gone, and he just heard these huge, big footsteps coming up the hallway towards him. And then he could not open his eyes, no matter how hard he tried. He was just so petrified, and he just felt this, you know, just heard these footsteps coming closer and closer, bang, 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 closer to him. And then he's like, he just knew, like, it was just pure evil. So he said he prayed, and he prayed and prayed for protection, and because all he could see, like, in his mind's eye or his imagination or whatever, was just this gigantic figure at his feet with these big, fiery, like, I think it was fiery blue eyes, just, you know, staring at him, and it was just evil. And then he, when he prayed, he felt bang, 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 bang. And he said he felt like an angel, one on his left side of him, one on the right side of him, one up the top left, one on the top right. And then he could hear like a clanging of like swords and, you know, armor and stuff like that. Like, you know, we're all running around with assault rifles and stuff like that. And, you know, he's hearing stuff like medieval stuff, like swords and shit. It's pretty crazy. But he said like he just reckons that, like, he got sent by angels, and they protected him until Feeney came in with the cross and, you know, pushed it away, and they got him out. Anyway, as he started telling us this story, you know, we're all got, like, all the guys that were, like, you know, were on the side of the fence or didn't think it was anything, you know, or, you know, just thinking it was a laugh, they're all, like, freaked out too now, because they've all had some sort of experience. They've felt that, you know, oppression, that evilness in the house, and they've seen what's happened to him, and so they're not joking about it anymore. And so we've, like, decided, hey, we've got to, like, record this before we forget anything of it. So we're, like, all sitting in a circle, and we're, like, each one of us will tell our point of view of it, you know, like, some sort of, we do in the army, you know, we do an after-action report, and everyone sort of says what their part was, what worked, what didn't work, sort of thing. So we started doing this after-action report on our deal, on our incident with the bizarre supernatural. And this is back, you know, the early 2000s sort of thing. So not all of us sort of have mobile phones or very flash sort of ones. One of my mates, he had two girlfriends on the go, so he had two phones. And both his phones were like, you know, a bit more flash than the rest of ours. So they could, you know, do voice recordings sort of thing. So we get out his two phones and put them down, and we start recording as we start talking of what we're, you know, we're taking turns talking about what just happened. And, like, within, you know, 30 seconds or something, it was really quick. Both of them were, like, dead flat. Couldn't record anything. Gone.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. If that isn't the universe telling you to leave that place alone, I don't know what is. It's insane. That's just so genuinely insane for, you know, for you to go back and have such an intense set of encounters happened to a guy who thought you were all just pulling his leg is literally the most unbelievable kind of thing to happen. But for him to be so affected by what happened to him is just incredible. And the fact that he had what almost sounded like was a battle for him.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%, man. Like, I'm not claiming I'm super religious or anything like that. Like, most of us have gone to sort of Catholic school and sort of things. So, you know, you grew up around a little bit of that sort of stuff, but not like this. Like, this was just so next level. It was just insane. And really, to put things into context, that was just the beginning of our ordeal, what we ended up calling the Ox Monster.
So you have these 2 days of super, super intense activity.
Yeah.
earlier you alluded to that this thing started to follow you, not just home, but like around the country and to multiple areas around the country at the same time. Are you able to tell me a little bit more about that?
So our time around the house hasn't finished yet. So the next, you know, we've had this bizarre incident, you know, we're sort of like, all of us sort of looking at each other like, what's going on? Like, what the hell happened? And not being able to put it in context. It's not like we can just go up to our chain of command and go, hey, can we move? Like, this place is really creepy. And you go, we've had something happen because, you know, that. So the next day we've had a pretty weird night. I'm trying to go work out what the hell we've just been through. But obviously, yeah, we can't just drop whatever we've got to do and debrief ourselves and go through and try and work out what the hell it was. We just got to get on with it and do what our duties were. So we head off that that morning to go ambush the people on the course. So we've got a map, you know, this is the grid square you got to be at a certain time. You know, it might only be like 1 or 2 kilometres away. It was nothing too arduous, you know, nothing we wouldn't be able to find. You know, this is back in the day before, you know, we all had our own GPSs and that sort of stuff. So you had compasses and radio and we've got a map and we all know how to navigate. So we head off and just something is not right. You know, there's just this feeling of anger around all of us. Like, we're all pretty good mates. We all get along really well, you know, have good fun together. Starting to get insanely angry with each other and our compasses aren't working and we get completely lost. We get completely lost in bush that we've been through many times, going to somewhere that's not hard for us to find, and we are just, you know, it's just not working. And this insane feeling of anger and stuff has just come across all of us. You know, we're all getting really shirty with each other. We all want to punch on with each other over nothing. We're all getting more angry with each other because we're lost and it's my fault, it's your fault, it's his fault sort of thing. And, everyone's blaming each other for different things. One of the guys is like really got angry and he's got his rifle and he's holding it by the barrel and he's just smashing it into trees and just being like completely like not himself. And, you know, you pull him up on it and then he wants to fight you, and it was just bizarre. And then one of the other guys, he's walking along, he's got his magazine on his rifle, and then like a second later, you know, he hasn't fallen over or hasn't knocked into anything, and then the magazine of his rifle is just gone, like that, just disappeared. He's like, it was just there a second ago, what the hell, you know. It's like, you know, weird stuff was happening. And you know, if you lose something like that, you know, you've got, even if there are any blank rounds, you still got 30 blank rounds in that rifle magazine that you got to account for. So the army's going to be pretty pissed off with you for losing something like that. You know, have to be investigated and that sort of stuff. And anyway, I can't remember whether we found that magazine or not, but I do remember it just disappearing. We're blowing our timings out completely. We're lost and we come across this road. And on this road, an old Land Rover's driving along and they stop and some sergeant and warrant officer starts yelling at us, telling us what piece of shit we are and how useless we are and how we stuffed up the day's training sort of thing, get in the back of the Rover and, you know, took us off to be somewhere to at least so they could try and salvage some of the training for the day. Anyway, we finished doing that stuff for the day and we go back to our sort of camp area for the night, which is moved sort of slightly, moved away from Moxley House. It's probably still K away or something from it, but it's not the same area that we've been in for the last few days. Can't see the house or anything from there. As the sun starts setting and stuff, we were going into a night routine, getting ready to actually go out and do night ambushes all night and basically make the guys on the course go through sleep deprivation just by constantly harassing them, their perimeter all night, so they have a really, really bad night's sleep and no one gets any rest. And while that's happening, my mate from the first night, he just starts getting really lethargic and he's like, man, I don't feel very well. Like, I don't think I can do anything. You know, I can't go.
And so you just see the color drain from his face, and he's like just really, really weak. And sort of, I think I checked his pulse, and was like really, really shallow, like it was really weak. So I go get a medic to come check him out, and then they've checked him out. Like, oh crap, he's got really, really, really low blood pressure. He's not well. We better get him out of here and get him checked out. So I chuck him in an army ambulance, and off they go, and we go off for the night and do what we had to do. I think we had a couple of nights, still doing that sort of stuff, and we didn't see my mate for the rest of the time we were out there, and nothing that stands out in my memory sort of happened during that sort of period. Anyway, it's coming up. We've finished that sort of exercise. We've left that training area, and then the next thing is it's the Christmas party for the company. And my mate who'd been off to hospital, he sort of come back, met back up, having beers, and he's like, oh, what happened? And he's like, oh, I had really low blood pressure. They didn't know what was wrong with me. Did blood tests and stuff. But then the further sort of, as I was away from there, I sort of started getting better. And, can't remember what exactly was wrong with him, but I don't think they could really pencil down like what was actually sort of wrong with him. He wasn't well, like you could see it. Like he was like all his energy, almost like his life force was sort of being drained from him. Anyway, so we're sort of all having a bit of a joke about it, sort of all the other guys in our unit sort of started hearing bits and pieces of it, and everyone sort of knows what this house is. And there's a few sort of stories that have been passed down, over the years of this place. Anyway, I see the staff sergeant at the bar, and he's actually the caretaker for the range there. So I go up to him, g'day staff, how are you going? Do you know anything about Oxley House? And he turns to me and he goes, why? Have you boys been fucking around in there? And I'm like, yeah, maybe. And then he proceeded to tell me, like, you couldn't pay me enough money to ever step foot into that place.
Wow.
And I'm like, holy crap. So I'm like, oh, what's happening? Tell me about it. And now as I've got older and stuff, I'm like, oh, maybe it's just Jamie on sort of thing. Like, but at the time, he's like, oh, no, there's apparently been, three or four, separate deaths inside that house, that recorded deaths in there. And
you're kidding.
Unexplained situations. I think one of them is saying, a hammer fell from the roof and spiked someone in the head and killed him. And, with my memory, I'm sort of taking that this stuff happened, in the 50s and maybe the 60s sort of thing. Like, it wasn't that, it wasn't hundreds of years ago, but it wasn't, in really close sort of memory. But about the time I was like, holy crap, I just took that as gospel. I was like, oh my god, it just freaked me out even more. I'm not sure whether those stories were true or not, but he definitely did tell me them, and they did make an effect at the time. Anyway, had a Christmas party, all was good, and and we sort of became a bit of an urban myth, bit of a joke, sort of thing. The guys were sort of joke about our experience and being scared of the ghosts and, the ox monster's going to get you and that sort of stuff. Guys would have a bit of a laugh. Anyway, over that Christmas period, my mate from the first night, the one that got sick, the one with the big crucifix, he had started having sort of stuff happen to him. Mate sort of feeling a presence around him, poltergeist sort of stuff. Nothing that I can really remember jumping out, as I can tell you the story about, but, and I was sort of having sort of weird stuff like that sort of happening to me too. But he was affected by it so much that he decided to go to church and go see, go have Catholic mass and go see a priest. And so at the end of the mass sort of thing, I'm having a chat with the priest, and sort of they're outside, and he's telling the priest the story that I've been telling you. And, when he sort of finished telling the story, the priest tells him, look up. And he's like, oh, what? And he looks up and goes, oh, it's really weird. I just thought you were like sunburned or something, but there's a handprint on your throat.
Whoa. You know,
Yeah.
Whoa. While in a church.
Yeah. So they've gone out, they're out front of the church, I believe, at this stage, telling the story, but yeah. And so, yeah, the priest could see it, but wasn't sure. And he's like, you know, once he actually looked up and, you know, he could see his neck properly, he thought there's a handprint there.
That's,
yeah.
That's terrifying. You know, like, you go through this encounter of just the most absolute insane stuff is happening, and it's kind of next level paranormal. Like, it's not just, you know, bumps in the night. It's things are changing around you.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you're off base. You're far away from this house. And then this happens to you. Jeez, that jump. I just do not know what would go through your mind.
Yeah. No, it was pretty crazy. So, like, I remember, same sort of period. I had a mate come stay at my place. He was sleeping on the floor, on a mattress on the floor. And he's a civilian mate, had nothing to do with this story. I hadn't told him the story or anything like that. And he sort of just waking up, the next morning. He's going, "Hey, man, there was something really weird in your room." And I was, pinned. He went through, a full, pinning. He was pinned on the bed, couldn't move. Sleep paralysis type thing. And, I'd started having sort of this weird experiences being in my house, being in the house alone, and feeling the entity, sort of at my door or coming into my room, just having these insane periods of feeling petrified for, no sort of reason. Wasn't seeing anything sort of visually. And I can't remember whether I was having sleep paralysis sort of stuff at that stage, but my mate had that happen, and that was about the same sort of time that my other mate had gone and spoken to this priest about it. And this was something, that I hadn't experienced before, before we'd come across that house. And I had our little dance with the very unknown. As I think the summer sort of wore on, that's when, and my mate, from the first night, we have both sort of got our postings to the regular. So I've gone off to Pukapunyu, in Victoria, and my mate's got posted to, he's at Wagga, in New South Wales. And while we're both at these training establishments, and you've had a bloke come on and tell a ghost story about Pukka before. I know the building you're talking about. It's a very, very strange place. I started having lots of weird sort of stuff there. You'd go to the bathroom in the middle of the night sort of thing, in big communal sort of bathrooms, and you'd hear doors opening, closing and stuff, but there's no one else there sort of thing. And it's, you're sharing a room with three other guys sort of thing. So I didn't see anything, but you could just feel this negative energy just come into the room sort of with me and really screw with your sleep. And especially while you're in training on courses, you're like, every moment of sleep you can get is a godsend. And to then be not sleeping because you can have something nasty come in and petrify you. It's not cool. So that's happening in Pukka to me. It's happening to him in Wagga. He then gets posted to Townsville. I get posted up to Darwin. While I'm in Darwin, I start getting mail sent to me from guys at my old unit, checking in the internal defence mail. And I'm getting bits of roofing iron and door locks and a key and weird shit just sent to me in envelopes with no explanation as to what they are. I knew exactly what they were straight away. I was like, "You bastards!" such a joke to them all. They all knew I was so petrified of it. I'm in my barracks in Darwin, and this went on for, I'd say, 6-8 months sort of thing, where I'd be in. So I've got my own individual bedroom, but you got three bedrooms to the one common room, one bathroom sort of thing. So you sort of it's like you're living your little apartment, but you all got your own sort of room sort of thing. So I would feel this energy come down like the walkway, like outside towards our build or towards our room, and then I'd feel it enter and then feel it at the other side of my door, and then it would come through to my, like, and at this stage I can feel it out front, or like out, it's not in my room yet, but I can feel it's out there, and I can move and all that sort of stuff like normal, and then I feel it enter my room and boof, I'm pinned to my bed, I cannot move.
Oh, wow.
I am absolutely petrified. I'm wide awake. I'm absolutely wide awake, and I am, if you've experienced sort of sleep paralysis or whatever, but you're like, this is why I don't think sleep paralysis, because like I'm conscious, like my eyes are wide open, but I cannot move, and like, you know, just trying to like lift one of your fingers, you know, it's taking you like half an hour, but you know, like to try and kick your leg or something like that, you know, you can't, no matter how hard you try, you think like you're doing the massivest, biggest kick, and you're like maybe moving like a millimeter type thing, and this just kept happening like nightly. You know, almost every night sort of thing. So I'm like getting like hardly any sleep. Got to get up early each morning, go do PT, function. Can't tell anyone about any of this stuff because they'll think I'm nuts and crazy and a wimp and stuff like that. So you're just like, oh, shit. Okay, this life's great. Just going through that. And eventually, like, it got to the stage where it was just so normal that I was like, oh, shit, it's, 2:25 in the morning, it's about time he turned up. No, oh, here he is. Great, here we go. And, you know, you'd just be, this would go on until dawn. And eventually, like one night, I just felt like I have to deal with this. I have to fight it. I have to confront it. I'm not going to let it petrify me anymore. And so I'm lying on my bed. I got pinned to my bed, but I just like had made this decision, this conscious decision, no, not anymore. And I said, like I said, like the Lord's Prayer or something, and then this time I saw it, and it was a black mass again, like I saw the first night, and it was at the end of my bed. And somehow I jump out of my bed, and I go to kick my foot, and I go to kick it, give it this big sort of roundhouse kick. And of course there's actually there, so my foot goes straight through the black mass, through my crappy blinds, and then smashes the louvers on my window in my barracks room. And then, yeah, it's like, oh, shit. So, you know, now, like, well, what am I going to do? Tell the sergeant that I smashed up my room because there was a ghost in there. So, trying to make up a story that one of my mates was over and, you know, we had over beers and just been dickheads wrestling around. And, I'll pay for it. Sorry, sergeant. This sort of thing. And, anyway, so that morning, like, fuck, I could tell Feeny about this, you know, because I'd been talking to him on and off, and he was sort of having similar sort of things happening as I was. And, you know, I was so excited, I finally, like, confronted it and then disappeared. And, like, so I ring him up, I'm like, hey, man, guess what happened last night? He's like, nah, bro, guess what happened to me? I'm like, oh, crap, okay? And so he's telling me his story. He's in his barracks room, and he asleep, and then suddenly he's flipped out of his bed onto the floor, his mattress is on top of him. He's like, you know, suddenly woken up, and so logically he's trying to work out what's just happened. So he's like, oh, okay, my ring unlocked, it wasn't coming out from being on the piss and then playing silly buggers, and because I'm asleep I didn't hear him step in and step out sort of thing. So he goes and checks his door, and it's still locked, so like there's no way anyone from the outside could have come in. And so he's been flipped out of his bed. I've had this thing appear in the foot of my bed, and I've gone to kick it and smash the window. And we're both going, holy crap. And then maybe a day or two later, I get a phone call from one of the guys back where it all originally started. He's like, oh, mate, you'll be happy to know that, they burnt down Oxley House the other day.
You're joking.
No, and so the same night, as it worked out, you know, it would have been the same night that me and my mate both have these culminations of, you know, crazy stuff, is the same night that bloody house was burnt down and gone.
It's kind of like it just came back for that one last hurrah to, like, try really stick it to you guys before before the house disappeared.
Yeah. Yep. It's insane, man. I can't even comprehend it.
Truly is it. Like, it is an absolutely fascinating story. And there's just so many elements that, you know, just genuinely leave me speechless, because I usually say to people, you know, like, that sounds like a Hollywood movie. You know, that sounds like that type of scary. But this sounds genuinely next level. You know, This is the stuff of nightmares. And what I just find so disturbing about the whole thing is that this became the normal for you. Like, you were ready for it. Like, 2 a.m., here he comes. G'day, mate. How you doing?
Yeah. Yeah. it was crazy. It was, it's amazing what people, when people go through like really insane stuff like that, like actually how we can kind of adapt to it. You know, the people that live in a house that they know is haunted, so, you know, where they're having things happen regularly, like, kind of, even though it still freaks you out and you're still having a really horrible time, you kind of become a little bit numb to it. Whereas, you know, if you're someone who's never experienced it, you know, they can, you know, would think it's the most petrifying, horrible thing ever and would, you know, can't understand how you could even function.
It really boggles my mind. Like, I know people have to live a normal life, but that is something that is just so unfathomable for me, to go and just accept that this is my normal life. This is the ghost that comes into my room at 2:30 every night, and I just get crap sleeps for years now.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, I started trying to, like, read up and, like, you know, do whatever I could to check myself, you know, like, getting, like, herbs and shit, stuff like that. Like, you know, like, I'm a soldier, man. I look into, like, what I look is, like, hippie stuff. Like, I need some sort of help, you know. But, you know, sort of found, like, they're just having the, starting to, like, have a bit of faith and, like, you know, read the Bible, sort of started making me a bit stronger. But then later on I had an incident, which really I think is what was able to block it away from me and protect me properly. So I started looking, trying to help myself, and might have helped a little bit, but it actually took a bit of soul searching later on and, you know, further incident to actually make me realize what I need to do and finally sort of rid myself of this thing.
Well, Ben, if it's okay with you, I would love to get you on again, because I know the Ox Monster is just kind of one feather in your cap, and the story that you have to tell, it's just so fantastic, and I don't want to rush you on it. So would you come back for another episode to share the story of how you kind of defeated the Oxley monster and what that process was?
Yeah, man, absolutely.
Awesome. Because I know the Ox monster was a huge, huge part of your life, but I know because you emailed me, that there is so much other paranormal aspects to your life that this is really kind of just scratching the surface for you.
Yeah, it's sort of, I suppose it's my most action-packed one, but definitely only one of them.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Believe Paranormal and UFO podcast. If you have had an encounter and you would like to share it, please get in touch with me. My email address is believepod@gmail.com. Finally, don't forget to follow us on all our social media outlets and be sure to join our Discord server to talk to other listeners of the show. You'll find all these links in our show notes. Thank you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.